all my riddles are answered in the movies.
That's a big Twinkie.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to GMC episode 15, the podcast that, if it ran for office, would actually keep its campaign promises. I'm Dave McVeigh.
And welcome to issue... Wrong show. I'm Richard Gray.
How are you, Richard? It's been a very long time.
In this episode... No, sorry. Normally we record another show before this.
We do. We're actually just kicking into a quick GMC. Dave Longo is absent from the desk today,
yes.
Unfortunately, so it's just the two of us.
He's at the Sydney Film Festival.
Yes, and very busy with the Sydney Film Festival. We thought we had better record something to explain where we've been.
Explain yourselves, young man.
Now, for those who listen to Behind the Panels, you'll notice that this has come out on your feed as well, and you're going, but this isn't Behind the Panels. I don't listen to this show.
This is kind of a crossover special announcement PSA thing.
Yeah, and it's not to say that we're podfading.
Okay. Basically, look. Let's just get this out of the way really quickly. We often say when we've missed a week or two, look, life got in the way. This time life really got in the way. A lot of stuff happened. We were going to do a show a couple of weeks ago and we just couldn't.
We'd actually gathered and everything.
And look, it's been an emotional month, and we'll say that. I want to give a personal thank you to everyone who reached out, because I did publicly say some stuff was going on. So many people, I can't thank all of you in one hit, just reached out to say, hey, you okay? You want to talk about it? People I didn't even think cared. There's a few listeners in particular. Look, I will single one person out. Jeffrey Withy wrote us a really nice long email, which meant the world to me. And I won't read it all out today, but Jeff, mate, it meant so much to me. So thank you. Thank you for supporting us. And everybody else who did that as well. I'm sorry I singled out one person, because so many people did it.
Absolutely. But, I mean, we've had a lot of people writing to us as well, just saying, you know, what's happening. You know, we want to hear from you guys and blah, blah, blah. We are still around.
We're still around. And look, basically, Behind the Panels is coming back very soon. In fact, we're working on a few interviews and things at the moment. We've got our 100th coming up in a few weeks' time, hopefully. Still working on a guest for that. That's an old saga in itself, but Behind the Panels, it's never going to go away, because we love that too much.
Absolutely.
GMC is a show we love doing as well, so that's why we thought it'd be easy to get one out quickly.
And we've always said from the very beginning, GMC has no rules to start with, A, so it's really easy to do one, and B, we've always said from the very beginning that it's on a regular schedule.
And look, it's a long weekend here in Australia. We don't have to get up tomorrow morning for anything.
And it's in the middle of the night here, so.
So we just figured we're going to do it. We're going to catch up on a lot of the films we've been seeing in the last couple of weeks.
This is going to be kind of a short, abbreviated show, in the sense that the films are just going to be like, rocket fast, we're going to kick through them, because we've seen a lot, and every film was supposed to be a show, and we haven't been able to do the show.
Yeah, so we're going to. This is kind of like your Reader's Digest version of
good way of putting
it.
And we will get back to a regular schedule in a few weeks. So just bear with us. In the meantime, we've got some plans. We've got some things that we've got planned. One of the things we've talked about on this show is the Buffy marathon.
Yes.
Richard and I have both started it, and funnily enough, so has Rachel from the Funky Film Show. She's basically said on Twitter, challenge accepted.
West Coast represent.
So we are going to get her on Skype, and she is going to do the Buffy marathon with us. I don't think she knows that yet, but she's going to do it.
I think we've asked her. We've mentioned
Well, and she has also emailed me, which I haven't gotten back to her yet. So Rachel, you listen to this show, so you know I'm getting back to you now. Yes, you're on, and we're going to do it as a separate entity.
And
so,
anybody who wants to do the challenge with us, we're watching all the episodes of Buffy, and then when appropriate, the Angel episodes as well.
Yep.
So we're basically talking about 12 seasons worth of television.
And here, we're going to be doing it one season per ep.
Yep.
So basically season one will be an ep. We might actually break the season two onwards into two eps, because they're 22 episodes.
Yeah,
so
season one is a nice short one at 13 episodes. The rest of them are a little longer. But I'm just preempt this by saying I'm really enjoying watching them again.
Me too, loving it.
It had been literally years since I'd watched these. I think since it ended in season seven, whenever that was, early 2000s. I've not really watched them since.
And it's really interesting as well, because my son has never seen a Joss Whedon show, and this is what really was very interesting point here, is that he has heard about the legend of Joss Whedon. He's heard about how good Joss Whedon is. Absolutely loved the Avengers.
Yes.
But never understood, I think, really
why it was so significant.
Why Joss was so important. And he, from episode one, he was hooked. He is actually hook, line, and sinker completely invested in Buffy at the moment. And he basically turned to me at one point and went, now I understand. it's like, yes. Now he wants to, of course, watch Firefly. He wants to watch Dollhouse. He wants to watch Angel. And we're just plowing through it.
He's seen Dr. Horribles, though, hasn't he?
That's the only thing he'd seen.
Yeah.
It's the only thing he had seen prior to...
Which might be the only thing I haven't seen. I've still yet to watch Dr. Horribles.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I haven't really watched any Dollhouse either. And I've got both of them on DVD or Blu-ray because they were given to me.
And all I'm
going to
say is I'm going to give it a hammer. And by hammer, I mean penis.
I'm sure that's a reference. Okay. What I am shotgunning at the moment, which we won't talk about this later, is Archer. I'm finally catching up on Archer.
Archer, I have plowed through Archer up until about season 3, I think it was.
Which is where I'm at now.
And I haven't actually managed to go back to it, but I love it. Whenever I watch it, I love it. And I've actually been collecting it, so I have all the Archers. I just haven't gone back to finish watching it. But Archer is one of those very funny shows. So, and with that voice talent, also with that voice talent is...
There's no quiet way of adjusting my sound quickly.
Well,
you
could have just gone like this and I would have dropped your volume on the board. That's all right. But he's also Bob's Burgers.
Yes.
With the same actor. And Bob's Burgers is just out of its mind. So these are all great shows, well worth watching. But we should talk about a couple of other things. Before we plow into the movies real quick, let's just finalize what we were saying. So... I think Behind the Panels is still off for another couple of weeks, and then we're going to come back with some strong stuff on that. GMC will be a regular throughout this next couple of weeks. I am planning a trip to Melbourne. Oz Comic Con is coming up. And
as am I.
That weekend, I'm not going to all of Oz Comic Con because, once again, all this personal stuff is getting in the way, but I will be there briefly.
And I will also be in Melbourne that weekend. So what we're suggesting...
And what we're suggesting is get in contact with us because we are trying to organize a Melbourne meetup. And somebody made a perfect suggestion,
yes,
which is that the Astor Theatre in Melbourne is going to be showing Alien on
with
the big
Tom
screen.
With Tom Skerritt and
they're coming in via satellite, though, aren't they?
No, they're going to be there because they're there for the con.
Oh, man, they're going to be there.
It's Tom Skerritt and Veronica Cartwright from Alien.
Yep.
Are going to be at the Astor Theatre with Alien.
We got to book that tonight.
We're booking that tonight.
Yeah, we'll have to book that tonight.
This will be the Friday, the 4th of July.
And we can plan a meetup at the Astor or before it or after it. It'll be late.
At a place
and
that's
there'd be
a
really, really fun to do a meetup of some of the fans out there. So that's, I'm not sure what the date is, but we will get back to you with more plans. We'll put it up on Facebook.
Yes.
We'll put it up on the Facebook page. Go follow the Facebook page, facebook.com/geekactually. Or Behind the Panels. We'll put it on both. We'll cross the streams.
Okay. Yes.
We'll cross the streams. And follow us on Twitter, of course, as well, because this is where you're going to find out all your information. So all the things about taking time off or weeks off or what have you that we're doing, at DVD Bits, at David McVeigh, these are the places to follow, and our Facebook page.
And I tweet a lot. Not as much as I used to, but...
I've been Facebooking way more than tweeting.
What's
it's really
that?
Weird. I don't know. I'm David McVeigh on Facebook, by the way, as well. So if anybody wants to follow me personally, but I don't know why you'd want to.
You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook.
And good night, folks. That's the end of the show.
You can find me on Tinder. No. Don't look for me there. Don't look for me.
Unless you're looking for a date. Now, the other thing I was going to say.
Grindr.
Did you watch, look, I don't want to get too much into it, but did you watch the Apple announcement at all?
I watched bits of it. I haven't watched the whole
thing. There's a video at the very beginning, which is people saying what their favorite apps are. And at one point it cuts to a guy and the guy goes, Tinder. And all I can think is I wanted to see some big bear going, Grindr.
It's not, you know, it's like Bruce Springsteen said, you can't start a fire without a spark.
Now, things have happened since we last did a show, such
really?
As the federal budget came out. Now, this is incredibly Australian-centric, I understand, but I just needed to raise this point because it made me laugh. I actually had a customer where I work the other day say, what do you think about all these changes to the internet that are being proposed? And it occurred to me that our federal government, Mr. Tony Abbott, our prime minister, has managed to literally lie about every campaign promise that he made, including, and this is what made me laugh, including the ones where he actually said he was going to do stuff. So, as an example, the federal budget, he had all of these cuts to services and things, which were all things he said he wasn't going to cut. Mm. Interestingly enough, the one thing that during the federal election campaign, he actually said he was going to cut, which was the NBN, the National Broadband Network, he didn't cut.
No, I actually saw even recently that the half of stuff they've already laid out doesn't actually work. that's the news story that's come out on the NBN recently.
I've got a lot of people who are on the NBN now and they're loving it. And so, you know, I just think it's very fun that not only is he cutting everything he said he wasn't going to cut, he isn't cutting the things he said he was going to cut.
I love this. This came out as well. Let's play a very small clip of this that came out since then. John Oliver's HBO show.
Oh, this was
brilliant! John Oliver, who used to be on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, did a little thing, a little roast of Tony Abbott as a result of this. And I'll just play a little bit. This is from the Sydney Morning Herald website, so it's got a little bit of their own commentary on there as well.
But you can also find this on YouTube. You can find it complete on YouTube. That's where I found it.
This is a nice abridged version.
Famed for its bouncing kangaroos and bloomin' onions, its current leader, hardline right-wing Prime Minister Tony Abbott, who rose to power promising to be pro-business and religiously anti-immigration. Literally, religiously anti-immigration.
And Jesus knew that there was a place for everything, and it is not necessarily everyone's place to come to Australia.
Exactly. Australia is for...
Sorry, I stuffed up the sound there, you got the joke.
I love it when he goes, my mummy calls him Tony Dum-Dum, and then the announcer goes... Prime Minister Dum-Dum.
There's some great things in there. I mean, like there's the famous thing where he was being, you know, confronted by media, and he just has this shit in your pants response.
Oh, that is so amazing. Tony, you're not saying anything.
And he's just nodding.
It is well worth going. So if you go to YouTube, this is how I found it. I looked it up, and it was actually, what is it called? Last Week Tonight?
It's Last Week Tonight. If you search for John Oliver, Tony Abbott, you'll find it.
Yeah. And it's well worth having a look at. It's actually one of the funniest things I've seen in quite some time. And it actually puts Tony Abbott onto the world stage as the person that we know him to be.
Yeah, he's got something like a 30% approval rating now in Australia. And they point that out in that clip.
At the very end, and he has the respect of his voters, and he goes, how are you? And the guy goes, dickhead.
A lot of that stuff's from a few years ago, but the thing is, that footage was playing before he got elected.
Yeah.
And this is the one political thing I will say, we try not to come down, the hell with it.
My political opinions are well and truly documented.
Yeah, I think mine are well established, but the thing is, I mean, I'm clearly not a Tony Abbott supporter, but the thing is, regardless of whether you support or don't support him or whoever's in parliament or whoever's in government in your country or whatever, don't vote them in or not vote them in and then sit on your ass for the next 3 or 4 years. Make your opinion known. Go to protest. Write to your local member. If you disagree with something, do that. This is our way of letting people know how we disagree with something. We're putting it out to you to
and
say...
And it's
look,
very
you know,
possible that Tony Abbott will not be Prime Minister for very long.
Look, if there was an election today, he would not be. No. And, you know, there's rumours abounding that Malcolm Turnbull will take over the position. Unfortunately, they're between a rock and a hard place because they, you know, of the many campaign promises that they've already broken, one of the ones that they said they wouldn't do was switch horses midstream because that's what the Labor Party
did.
We've actually got Tony Abbott standing in front of a list of things that they promised to do that he signed off on, and every single one of those got broken in the federal budget.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And as I say, they didn't cut the NBN, which was a long-standing, this is what they were going to do, and they didn't do it. So, that's This Week in Politics. But, yes, we're having fun with our Australian politics at the moment because we have a madman in office. So
a genuine madman.
Yeah, he is insane.
Well, you heard that clip.
Yeah.
Jesus thinks it's not everyone's place to come to Australia. For God's sake.
Yes, so it's a bit of a concern.
While the housewives are doing their ironing.
Oh, that. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, and the winking with the sex worker,
and also that they asked him his position on homosexuals, and he said...
Makes me uncomfortable.
Makes me uncomfortable. She was like, yeah, I meant more your policy. not you personally. Yeah. Oh, God. Like, yeah. It's a joke. I mean, I was laughing so hard throughout the John Oliver clip, and then until the point where I realized... Oh, that's our government.
Yeah, that's our Prime Minister.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Oh, well, moving right along. The other thing that happened this last few weeks that we haven't been able to report on is J.J. Abrams.
Yes.
Now, two things about J.J. Abrams came out. First one was the Force for Good campaign, which he came out on a video, which he was basically saying that you can win a walk-on part to Star Wars and also help support children and so forth.
What would you prefer, a walk-on part in Star Wars or a leading role in a cage, to quote Pink Floyd?
But what was the most exciting part of that whole video was as a little wink to all the Star Wars fans out there, one of the aliens walked by.
As opposed to a little wink to sex workers out
there. Well, there is that too. But a little alien walked by, a little puppet alien walked by and actually kind of looked at camera. And it was so awesome because it's all practical. And JJ kind of looks at him and kind of like, what are you doing here? You know. But the second one was the one I love even more.
Yeah.
The second one came out. Somebody posted set pictures of the building of the Millennium Falcon.
Right.
And basically leaked that they were building a full-scale Millennium Falcon on a soundstage. J.J. Abrams came out and tweeted best tweet ever. Basically, he had a post-it note stuck to something that basically said, please don't leak these pictures, and there is no confirmation whatsoever that the Millennium Falcon isn't even in Episode 7. The post-it note is stuck to the holographic chessboard from the Millennium Falcon.
I suggest a new strategy, David. Let the Wookiee win.
Which I think is just perfect.
Speaking of Star Wars, during the time we were off, 3rd of June passed. Now, 3rd of June 1999 in Australia was the day that Phantom Menace was released here. We got about a week later than the States back then. And I realized that means it's exactly 15 years since I've eaten meat.
Hey!
Because for some reason, so... I will.
Mazel tov.
I think that's what you get for a vegetarian, isn't it? Yeah.
Mazel tov cocktail.
Oh.
Boy, I haven't heard
that. That's a great name for a band, isn't it?
There you go. Probably already used.
Probably, yeah.
I haven't heard that celebration theme in a long time. It was like heartwarming.
I know. Right?
Well, speaking of that, by the way, I should also point out, because I don't think we've given him proper credit till credit's due, Adrian Del Bianco, who wrote our main new theme for this show. I've been talking to Adrian, and I got to say, I just love our new theme. But Adrian is also always coming up to me and saying, oh, have you heard this or have you heard this? I've been playing with this. And I said, Adrian, how about you send some of these things to me and we'll just play them in the show. We'll just showcase some of your music. And he goes, okay, I'll start doing that. So we should be starting to bring you some original Adrian Del Bianco tunes.
That'd be cool.
For like breaks in the middle of the show and stuff like that. So it should be kind of fun.
That'd be nice. Yeah, no, I like that.
Yeah, it'd be cool. We'll just have like chill out with his music for
a bit. We can be like GMC Unearthed or something. send us your self-recorded tunes. And
That's actually a good point. Anybody else who is out there who is trying to get their music heard and so on.
And what's that email address again, David?
It would be feedback@gmc.com.
GMC or geekmovieclub.com?
Oh, it's geekmovieclub.com. That's right. Yeah. Or you can just send it to feedback@geekactually.com. That works too.
Or even feedback@behindthepanels.net.
That works too.
All of them work. They all come to us.
They all come to us. But if you are an aspiring musician or a remixer or what have you, and speaking of remixes, we have a remix for the end of the show, which I love.
Oh, if you're going to play that at the end of the show,
yes.
I want to quickly play a song from something else I've been watching lately.
Okay.
I've been watching Portlandia. That's the other show I've been getting into.
So how is the show? Well, the song's great.
The show's great. Look, I'm just going to say to anybody out there listening to who watches Portlandia, they will know exactly what I mean when I say put a bird on it. And I love it. I didn't realize how sketch-based it was.
Right.
I thought it was. And who? Look, it's Fred Armisen from SNL.
Right.
And Carrie Brownstein, who's from the band Sleater-Kinney. Who knew she could act, let alone be this funny?
Oh, well, there you go.
So, I love the show, and I think it's into its third or fourth season now. I'm going to Portland next year, which is why I've started watching it. I'm going over there for a conference.
Won't you be shattered if you get to Portland? There's nothing like that.
No, I'll be looking for the Women on Women bookshop and stuff.
And all the hot women wear glasses, right?
Yeah, I'm here.
Speaking of glasses, I just went and spent $700 today on new glasses.
Glasses? So
I was like, good Lord. About four pairs.
It's a good thing my eyesight's perfect, he says, knowing that he has to book himself in for eye test the next couple of weeks.
I've got like this checklist. I went to the dentist a couple months ago. Check. Right. It's like, optometrist is now done. Check. You know? It's like working my way through my checklist. We should get onto the nuts and bolts of this show. So people have been away, so let's talk a little bit about movies just to fill you in on some of this. Oh, yes.
And then I think it's time, if we're going to do movies, we have to play this.
I'm watching you, Wazowski. Always watching.
See, it's been so long I almost forgot.
I know. I just remembered. Well, I've got a soundboard here, haven't
yeah,
I?
Yeah, so do I. What do I have got on my soundboard? Oh, you're this.
Oh, that. Oh, fuck that.
Yeah, there you go. I have a soundboard too.
I've missed this show.
Yes. All right, so while we've been away, and it just occurred to me that we've been away for an awful long time because there's a lot of movies we've seen. So.
Yeah, one or two.
Yeah, so let's kind of work our way methodically through them.
Let's start with our favorite one.
And yeah, let's start with our favorite. I think quite possibly one of my favorite films of the year. Let's have a little listen to this.
Madness, huh?
This carne asada, check it out.
Wow.
Chef Big Dog up all night cooking.
Shut up and taste this, a mousse douche. Come here, guy.
Look at that.
You like it?
Yeah.
We're gonna cook like this.
We're being reviewed by the most important critic in the city.
Now suddenly you're gonna be an artist. Well, be an artist on your own time. It's my restaurant.
The kitchen is my domain. That was our deal.
The deal has now changed. Either you stay or you go.
So you're threatening to fire me now?
No, I'm telling you what I'm prepared to do if you don't cook my menu.
All right, so the film in question is Chef. Hello. The film in question is Chef, written and directed and starring and produced by Jon Favreau.
I just got a message, apparently.
Oh, yeah, who from? Cher. So Favreau has gone kind of indie film and low budget.
Back to his swingers days.
Back to his roots.
Well, no, he's the film swinger. It's not back to his actual. He's so money.
So this is post Iron Man, Iron Man 2, and Cowboys and Aliens. And he's decided to do something just slightly smaller.
You know what I'm going to say about this film?
You're so money.
There you go. I liked this film a lot. I can't tell you how much I like this film. First of all, it's food porn, every shot where they're cooking is like exquisite.
I mean, I got to say, I mentioned just a minute ago that I've been vegetarian for 15 years. Even the meat stuff looked fantastic to me.
But they go to that one Texas place and they've got that smoked meat and they're cutting. It's like, oh my God, this looks good. But secondly, it is a
script. For me, it was the beignets in New Orleans.
Yeah. Oh God. And just the Cubanas that they're making. And that...
grilled cheese sandwich
is like the most amazing thing you've ever seen, and it's just a grilled cheese sandwich.
Yeah.
But it's like seven types of cheese.
You know? But more than that, it's a really inspirational film.
Yes,
and it
came at a really good time for you.
It came at a really good time for me because it's all about moving on after a hard knock, and it's all about just remembering what you're passionate about.
Yeah, absolutely.
And getting back to your roots.
It made me think about a lot of things. One of the impetuses for having a holiday coming up and stuff like that.
And also, I mean, it's also for me, like, you know, my response to some stuff was to pull myself away from a lot of things. But then I remembered how much I like doing this.
Yeah.
I like getting, I mean, sitting in front of this microphone or behind it, depending on your point, from a certain point of view. that was for you, Longo. Just sitting here reminds me, this is my passion. This is what I like to do. I love my own voice.
I love hearing myself speak. The other thing microphone. I really loved about this script was that you watch so many movies today and you know exactly where they're going.
And you can feel like a drama's coming.
That's right.
And
you can actually see
coming.
The beach and you go, okay, so this is what's going to happen. They do things that would normally be foreshadowing of something else. And so as an audience, we go, oh, we know what's coming. Never happens.
No.
And I love that. I love the fact that...
It's just an upbeat film.
I'll give you one example. Small spoiler, but I'll give you one example. He buys his son a knife.
Yeah.
Because his son is learning how to cook. And he buys one and he goes, this, you know, keep it sharp, look after it. It's going to last you a good long time.
And it's almost foreshadowed because his son burns himself at one point.
Yeah, so I sit there going, okay, so I know where this is going. His son is going to cut himself. He's going to end up in hospital. There's going to end up being a custody case over this, you know, blah, blah. None of it. None of it. You know, and you sit there and go, I love that. I love the fact that it just didn't want to go the normal way.
You know, already he pulls up to a beach and it's like, you know, you haven't got your permit. And they sort that out.
Yeah.
You know?
and the cop says, can I take a selfie with you?
Yeah. You know, there's no kind of major crisis where like, oh my God, we're almost going to lose everything. It's like, no, he puts his reputation and his money on the line and it works out for him.
Absolutely.
You know,
and it's just
that's not a spoiler because that's just the movie.
And it's got this beautiful, rhythmic South American beat that runs across the entire background of it. Everybody is doing a great job. Favreau is just absolutely
They travel pretty much across all of the South of America.
Yeah.
Like it's not South America, the Southern States.
But it's also about social networking and how you actually tag into people.
And apparently he didn't get any money from Twitter, even though it looks like it's a giant ad for Twitter. But he said he wanted to use Twitter the same way he used the answering machine back in Swingers.
Yeah.
That this is the social currency now. This is how you get a message out.
And so they talk about Vine videos at one point. They talk about Facebook. They talk about Twitter. They talk about all these things. And it's like the sun is teaching him.
Look, and everybody in it is fantastic. Like, you know, this is, who are the people? I mean, obviously, John Favreau writes, directs, stars in it, and he's great at all of them.
The only weak point, I would say, is probably
Robert Downey Jr. Who's clearly come along because he'll do anything for Favreau.
Yeah, and he's not bad by any long shot, but he's just...
It's just that his character's not really needed.
And he's kind of out of place.
He's out of place. But look, you know, John Leguizamo is fantastic.
He's brilliant.
Bobby Cannavale is fantastic.
Sofia Guevara. Her name has gone out of my head.
Sofia Vivara.
Vivara, thank you. Yes.
Scarlett Johansson's fantastic.
Scarlett Johansson was an eye-opener,
you heard
actually.
Dustin Hoffman in the trailer there. They're all fantastic. Oh, and the food critic, Oliver Platt, is also fantastic. You know, everyone in this is just clearly working for less money than they normally would and just doing it out of love, which is kind of what this movie is about. Dave Longo, who's not here, of course, says that he thinks there's sort of almost a slight thing in there about Favreau sort of going, well, I could keep making studio films like this guy. I could keep making the same menu over and over. Or I could get back to my roots, you know, which is kind of what he's done with this. And, you know, if this is a sign of where Favreau is going for the rest of his career now, I'd love to see him make another five of these than, you know, another Marvel film. Although Iron Man is a magnificent film.
Absolutely. But I am all in for more of this. This was sensational filmmaking. Beautiful to look at.
Mm.
As I say, the food stuff is just pornographic the way it's made.
As I said, even as a bed show, I loved looking at it.
Out of 5 Cubanos, how many Cubanos would you give it?
I'd be tempted to give it a full 5 Cubanos because I very rarely do that. So I'm going to just go and give it 4.5 Cubanos because I got a little full and I've left half a slice there, but it's still there. So let's say 4.5.
And I'm going to give it the 5.
Well, to hell with it then. I'm going to give it 5
I'm going to give it the 5 and I'm going to say I think it is quite possibly one of the finest films
because I actually can't find a fault in it.
Yeah, I can't either. And this year...
It's 5 Cubanos. That's 10 Cubanos.
10 Cubanos. It's a great sandwich. You should have it anyway. And
no, wait. I'm going to give it 5 grilled cheese.
Oh, you're going to give it the grilled cheese.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, baby. 5 cheeses on that grilled
cheese. Oh, yeah, 5 cheeses on my grill.
So far this year, we are now in June. I think it is actually one of the finest films of the year.
Look,
I would not be surprised if I'm still saying that at the end of the year.
Dave Longo agrees with us on that one.
Yeah.
He was saying the same thing. He sort of came back. He saw it before us.
He did.
And he came back to us and said, you know, this might be top 5 of the year for me.
This was one of those films where when I saw the trailer, I went, that looks interesting.
Mm.
No idea what this is going to do, but it looks interesting.
You know, like in terms of your big blockbusters, Cap America 2 is up there for
absolutely.
Me. We've got Guardians
coming
up.
That's to say one of. It's a different category to Cap.
Look, how can you compare these two films is impossible, which is why I don't like rating systems. It's why we have ridiculous rating systems on this show. On my website, I have things like Better Than the Average Bear.
All I'm going to say is, it's a must-see film. Go see it.
Definitely must-see film, particularly if you need to be inspired by something. As you were just hitting my microphone left, right, and
like
center
this.
Here. Oh, David. If you want to be inspired by something, and there'll be another film we'll talk about, which is quite inspiring, in a moment. But first, we're going to talk about a literally bigger film.
A much bigger film. Here it comes.
I want to talk to somebody in charge. You are not fooling anybody when you say that what happened was a natural disaster.
You're lying.
It was not an earthquake. It wasn't a typhoon.
Because what's really happening is that you're hiding something out there. And it is going to send us back to the Stone Age.
You bet.
So basically what happened was his meth lab blew up.
And he was high as a kite. Let me tell you.
I am the one who knocks. We're talking, of course, about Godzilla! Or Godzilla, if you...
Now, this is a funny film because when I saw it, we saw it at IMAX together.
And we did.
We didn't expect anything.
Holding hands the whole time.
And we did not expect anything from this film.
No.
And I got to say, I quite enjoyed it. I thought this was a fun film.
This has been a divisive film. Okay, I'll say, yeah, I enjoyed it too. And if you've seen the review on therealbits.com, you can see that I've quite enjoyed it.
I have the counter opinion to this, so we'll come back to it.
No, look, there is a legitimate counter opinion to this because all the reasons I love this movie, I can see a reason why people wouldn't like it if they're expecting something else. You'll recall that I wasn't a huge fan of Pacific Rim.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was just big things fighting other big things, which is cool, but for me that was boring. I wanted a little more tease. I wanted a little more tension. I wanted a little more foreplay. And Godzilla's really about the foreplay.
More so than the climax, really.
More so than climax. Although the climax... it's freaking awesome. it's your real rip your head off kind of climaxy stuff. The film is, if you've seen Gareth Edwards' first film, which was Monsters, you'll know that he's all about the tease, the not showing the monster, the kind of mood about the humans around it. And this is what he does here, to the point that when you when the first half dozen monster fights are either seen on TV screens or as doors are closing or you'll see them obscured by buildings or something, you know, and that for a lot of people was frustrating, but that was the bit that I loved about it because I was sort of sitting there on the edge waiting to see Godzilla, and then Godzilla's finally revealed about halfway through the film, you know, toes to like Bigfoot comes in, pulls up, toes the thing, big familiar Godzilla cry, and you're kind of like, hells yeah.
And I love the fact that even though it's CG nowadays, they made it look like a man in a suit.
Yeah.
It's got that kind of weird, heavy man in a suit look.
Which the other mutos, which are the other monsters, didn't have.
No, it's just Godzilla. Yeah. And I love that about it. We took my son to see it, and he actually wasn't very impressed. I think his reaction was the same reaction I've heard from a few people, which is, I like a little bit more Godzilla in my Godzilla movie.
Yeah.
And I can kind of see his point of view, and I can understand what people are saying. But if you are a fan of Godzilla and you've watched Godzilla movies in the past, this is primo stuff.
If you watch the original Godzilla, Godzilla's not in it that much.
No.
And partly that was a special effects thing. But it takes a long time before Godzilla's introduced. It's got some people investigating things. Look, you've got, apparently the Japanese cut, you have a lot more of him, but Ken Watanabe's in this and he's fantastic. He's got our favorite line from anything ever.
Ever. It's my favorite line.
Ready? On three. One, two. Let them fight. we're big geeks, right? So we love this stuff. This is to me. I mean, this is a Godzilla film.
Absolutely.
This is. I think if you're a Godzilla fan and you know the Godzilla films, like you were saying just now, David, if you know the Godzilla films, you're gonna get a tingle out of this. You know, if you're going and expecting monster trashing from beginning to end, and this is the other thing too. We've gotten really frustrated with films that have just been destroying cities for the sake of it. This is a real consequences of that kind of thing. You see people on the ground having to deal with that.
And of course, we've seen that meme that's going around at the moment, which is Godzilla destroying the city, and it says Superman trying to save the city.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same.
I mean, look, the one thing I will say against this film is that the role of women are pretty abysmal.
Yeah.
They've got some amazing actresses to play the lead.
And nothing roles.
You've got Elizabeth Olsen, who's Scarlet Witch. She was in some amazing films like Martha Marcy May Marlene and so forth. And she's just the kind of...
she's sidelined.
She's the cheerleading housewife in this, despite the fact that she's clearly got a career in a hospital and you know, all these things are going for her, but she kind of just... she's not going to win any Mothers of the Year award in this movie either.
No.
But the other... The two other criminal ones is to get Juliette Binoche to play Bryan Cranston's wife and then get rid of her fairly quickly. And, opening scene spoilers.
Yeah,
people.
Opening scene.
And Sally Hawkins, who is a magnificent actress.
And that's actually one of the worst ones of them all.
She literally comes in, has, I think you can count on one hand how many pieces of dialogue she has in the film.
I think she says, sensei.
Sensei. And then when she calls over her sensei, Ken Watanabe, all of her dialogue is seen happening off audio. You can still see her talking to him. And then at one point, that literally there is a point where she's introducing and going, oh, so-and-so, sorry for your loss. He's Ken. you know, kind of thing. And he carries
have
on the rest of the
book. Have you met Ken?
She doesn't get to explain it. Yeah, exactly. Have you met Ken? She gets to explain everything. So, how I met your Watanabe, you know?
But, there's the hit of the next fall season.
Let me tell your children.
Let them fight.
Okay, well, but look, basically, so how many destroyed cities are we giving this?
Oh, I'm going to give it, look, quite frankly, I'm going to give it 3.5.
3.5 toppled cities?
3.5 toppled cities out of 5. I don't think it's a perfect film, no. But it's far better than I thought it was going to be.
I think I gave it 4 toppled cities on reflection because I've seen it a second time since I reviewed it, and I would give it 3.5 toppled cities.
Yeah, I think if we'd done the show when we were supposed to do this show, I probably would have given it 4.
No,
yeah.
I gave it 4 in my initial review, but then we all went and saw it again. That's when we saw it.
It does suffer from really slow spots.
And knowing, because like, I think what gave it to me the first time was that anticipation. Mm-hmm. And knowing when he's going to appear and whatnot does make bits of it drag in retrospect.
I agree.
Yeah. So.
No, I agree. So, yeah, I'm going to give it 3.5 toppled cities, I think. But I did enjoy it a lot.
All right, deep breath. Next film.
Next film. another really big film that came out this last couple of weeks. And it sounds a bit like this.
So many battles waged over the years. And yet, none of them like this. Are we destined to destroy each other? Or can we change who we are and unite? Is the future truly set? Mutants, we now find ourselves on the edge of extinction. You'll need to go into the past to end this war before it ever begins.
I'm going to stop it there because, you know, it's a really dreary trailer.
Mutants. These are the voyages. The
it's a really dreary trailer.
I met a young man named Eric Lencher.
Now, I'm going to start off and say that none of the trailers did anything for me.
No.
I had zero anticipation for this film.
Mm. I had a little anticipation, but it wasn't much.
I had a little bit of constipation, maybe. I was
really?
I was
are you getting enough fiber, Dave?
I was very worried about this film. Nothing about it. Nothing about it had set me on fire.
So what you're saying, this film was a bit like an enema?
A little bit, because as soon as I watched it, it cleansed me out.
Okay, I'm gonna say that we're putting an end to that analogy right now.
Yeah, let's do that. We'll finish that.
Because it was a really shit analogy.
I actually really enjoyed this film.
I really did too. Look, I'm going to admit something to the audience right now. I lost consciousness at one point in the film, very briefly. It had been a rough night.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed this film too.
The film, by the way, X-Men Days of Future Past. We should mention.
Probably guess.
Yeah, we should back announce some of these titles.
X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Yeah, part 2.
Yeah, part 2. So basically, time-traveling Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes liberties with the original Days of Future Past.
It resembles very little of the original Days of Future Past. It's got Sentinels, somebody time travels, that's about it.
And look, if you try and tie the continuity of all the previous films with this, just forget it. And I think even though they played clips of it in the film, I think they've conveniently forgotten Last Stand.
Yeah, all they remembered about Last Stand.
Even if you take the end of Last Stand, and spoilers for a film that we've had 5 sequels since. even if at the end of Last Stand where his body's transferred into another body, does that mean that not only did he get transferred into a body that's completely identical, but it's also crippled in the future?
It was the same,
presumably.
With the same injury. Yeah,
the same injury, yeah. Exactly. So, I don't know. Yeah, look, amazing concept for a film. Like the way they actually pull it. Bryan Singer, don't normally like his aesthetic, but he's got it right this time.
Still, a couple of things here and there. I didn't like some of the future design.
The future design is the most Singer-y.
Yeah, and it's like the uniforms they're wearing and the Sentinels. Some of the future design left me a little bit cold. His period design, though, is phenomenal. The Sentinels look great. look,
it
I'm
seems
going
to work better in period design. Because remember, like the opening scenes of X-Men,
yeah, yeah,
with the Second World War camps and stuff like that. That stuff was impeccable.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah, so I'm kind of happy to say that this was a great film. This was a lot of fun. I think in my initial reaction to this was, this is what X-Men 3 and the two Wolverine sequels should have been.
Yes.
Forget all of that. This is what it should have been right from the get-go.
It starts off very much as a Hugh Jackman vehicle again, but when you get into the new X-Men cast, which is the younger versions of them, that's when it really flies. And I think this is now given it carte blanche to do more with them.
Yeah.
My understanding is that the next film, X-Men Apocalypse, will be set with that cast, but in the 80s.
Yeah, I think the original cast has now been written out. I think basically except for Wolverine, of
let's
course.
Let's just say, a lot of you have had a chance to see this already, but let's just say they've Star Trekked it.
Yes.
we're in a situation where we can have our cake and eat it too.
Yeah, we can have
it. Why wouldn't you eat your cake if you had it?
Well, if you had it, why wouldn't you? So basically, with a bit of time travel magic, it is now possible that we can have either X-Men cast, and we can actually, I'll even go so far as to say that we could probably even do a proper Phoenix Saga now if we really wanted to.
If we really wanted to, yeah. We'd have to recast Jean Grey and Cyclops because they're not young anymore.
No, but they're... She's still goddamn hot, though.
She really is. Yeah, she turned really up in The Wolverine as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think the next film Apocalypse, and then we've got another Wolverine sequel.
That's what they're threatening us with. Yeah. Yes.
There is some rumor that the next Wolverine sequel might be the last Wolverine film, and they're talking about Old Man Wolverine.
I'd like to see that.
I would, they can't do exactly as it is in the comic because at least two or three of the characters are owned by different companies. There's at least one.
They'll rewrite.
I think there's an Osborn in there, and there's and the Hulk and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so
they could rejig all that. That's fine. I gotta say, yeah, I enjoyed this a lot. I really like Peter Dinklage in it. I really like the way it was handled. But the standout moment, the absolute standout moment, belonged to Quicksilver. Which is
Look, this scene, like your move, Joss Whedon, because
yeah,
the whole well publicized thing about Quicksilver's being in both films, right? Both companies, Quicksilver has Marvel has the right, Fox has the rights, right? And we thought, okay, and from what we'd seen of Quicksilver from Fox, was a guy wearing goggles and a pleather jacket. Yeah. And there was a hamburger commercial as well that he did, which was ridiculous. But the sequence in this film. Just outstanding. I can't even give words to
justice. I'm going to say that if you thought the Nightcrawler opening sequence to X2 was impressive, you ain't seen nothing.
No, this is, and that was when Bryan Singer was firing on all cylinders, that Nightcrawler scene. That was the last time he was probably firing on all cylinders. This is a glimpse at Bryan Singer as we remember.
It's his Days of Future Past.
Yeah, right?
You're right. Your move, Joss Whedon, because Joss Whedon, I'm sure, was sitting there going, yeah, we're going to do this. I'm sure they sat down and watched that and went, oh, crap.
Yeah, because that is how, and apparently Quicksilver's going to have a much bigger role in Apocalypse. Mm. Because they were setting up, but I mean, it really is. Can you think of everything you can do with someone who's lightning fast? Time, like where everything looks as though time stopped and that kind of thing. Picture that in a very crowded live
environment. And up until now, we've always done that as streaking backgrounds or slow motion. This is just staggering.
With a great soundtrack to boot.
Yeah. So it is the standout moment of the film, and I would see the film again and again and again just to see that sequence.
Yes.
Because it is staggering. So yeah, full credit to you, Mr. Singer, for pulling off one of the greatest sequences I think of the last 5 years.
So David, how many adamantium claws will we give this?
Oh, I'm giving this 4 adamantium claws.
I will also give it 4.
Yeah, I think this is definitely 4. This is definitely a step in the right direction for the X-Men franchise.
We've given the same marks all night, David.
I know. We've actually forgotten a film on this list, by the way.
Oh, what was that?
And we may actually have a difference of opinion on it. So we also saw Maleficent.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't have a trailer lined up for Maleficent.
I'll find one.
So if you can bring it up here or bring it up there, it's okay. We also saw Maleficent, which is the Angelina Jolie retake of the classic Disney tale, which I think you and I went to with the complete belief it was going to be crap. I mean, quite frankly, the let's just remind the audience here that the track record at this point of bringing these fairy tales to life in this kind of retconned way has been the Alice in Wonderland, Tim Burton, which was visually spectacular but heartless. We had Oz the Great and Powerful, which was visually spectacular, but heartless.
Except for the opening sequence, which was beautiful. And now
and Snow White and the Huntsman, which was visually spectacular.
That wasn't a Disney one, but yeah.
Yeah, but it was the same retconning of a fairy tale. Visually spectacular.
The only exception being maybe Mirror Mirror. Which I love the
Mirror
hell out of.
Mirror, I love the hell out of. And there's a lot of people who disagree with me, but I thought it was a lot of fun.
Well, put up a trailer. Let's have a quick listen to this.
Listen.
Well, well. I shall bestow a gift on the child. Before the sun sets on her 16th birthday, she will fall into a sleep like death.
And you know the story of Sleeping Beauty. And it's a story that Disney's done before. And they, yes, very much use the same design for Maleficent.
All
as
the
they
green
did
fire and everything. I mean, it's just beautifully done. Visually gorgeous.
This is kind of Wicked.
Yeah.
This is the musical Wicked, which was Sleeping Beauty what Wicked did for Wizard of Oz, and I didn't mind this too much. I actually
and that's what I was gonna say. I was actually pleasantly surprised that it wasn't the steaming pile that I thought it was going to be.
If they hadn't done a lot of the stuff that they did in this already in Frozen, it would have been a really clever original take on the fairy tale genre.
And I'm going to go out on the record and I'm going to say this is the best thing Angelina Jolie has done in a long time.
Look,
she is mesmerizing.
If you see this, no matter what you think of the film, Jolie's performance is phenomenal.
In fact, I saw a review.
Said phenomenal too many times tonight.
I saw a review on this film, which I absolutely agreed with, and I think it may have been Slash Film. I'm not sure, but basically, where they said that it was an unforgettable performance in a completely forgettable film.
Yeah,
and I kind of agree. I don't think the film is completely forgettable, but it is not a brilliant film in the sense that it's not going to be go down as a masterpiece by any means, and we're not going to be really thinking about it in 10 years, but we will have that image of Maleficent for years to come.
Yes.
Because just striking imagery, and she is just invested in that performance.
Probably
completely.
The weakest link in the film is Sholto Copley's character.
Which is a shame.
Because he's great.
And Elle Fanning, who is a very solid young actress, really has nothing to do.
She just kind of waifs her way through it.
Well, she's unconscious most of the film, being floated around by my
Some of the fairy stuff I didn't gel with me. It was a little. There's that thing that Disney can't help but do, but be a little bit twee in there.
Yeah.
And look, you know me, I'm Disney's bitch. I love everything Disney does, but sometimes that stuff feels forced in, and it does in this because they're going for dark, but they can't help. They don't want to go all the way.
Yeah.
So they kind of hold back a little bit by throwing
but
these
when
tweeners.
When they strike gold in the effects, they strike gold. There are flying sequences in this that put any superhero or any Superman to shame.
The flying stuff's phenomenal.
There's a sequence in it where she actually folds her wings up and she does this spiral through the clouds, gathering the clouds around her, and then she just unfolds the wings and just hovers in midair with the wind flickering through her feathers for a minute. And you just sit there going, this is the most gorgeous thing I've ever seen in my life. You know,
look, when it gets it right, it's beautiful. Other times it looks, a little cheaped out. But look, how many
fairies.
How many fairies do we give this?
Look, I am actually going to go out on a limb and say it's above average.
Yeah.
I think her performance pushes it into that above average territory. I'm going to give it 3.5.
Half fairies. A fairy.
Yeah, I'm going to cut a fairy in half, pluck its wings out.
I'm going to sound like a broken record. I think I'm going to give it the same.
Yeah, I'm going to give it 3.5 because I don't think, for me, 3 is average.
Yep.
It's the dead middle mark, and I think it's just above that, so I'm going to give it 3.5.
I can't say it.
And I will buy it when it comes out in Blu-ray, because it looks gorgeous, you know?
It'll look great on your 3D TV.
Oh, won't it?
Now, we've talked about a lot of heavy issues-based movies. I needed to see something that was just flat-out surrealist, silly fun. And
you've got to look to McFarlane.
And you've got to look to Seth MacFarlane. This movie hit the bill. Let's have a listen.
The ice. Why is it so big?
So it doesn't melt. It's actually really interesting how they do it. It's this one company out in Boston that.
Ah! Ah! That went south so fast! Ah!
The American West is a terrible place in time. Everything out here that's not you wants to kill you. Angry drunk people, hungry animals, outlaws. Oh, the fucking doctor.
I couldn't save her.
She had a splinter. Doc, what the hell were you supposed to do?
I would like to welcome a new member to our community.
Welcome to our awesome town.
What's with this fair?
Every year people die.
Really?
Everybody hold still.
People die at the fair.
People die at the fair.
People die at the fair.
People die at the fair. Which will go down as one of our catch cries forever now. People die at the fair.
I love the hell out of this film. I've actually seen it twice.
I want to see it again, actually. I really enjoyed it.
I would see it a third time because I've actually seen it 2.5 times because we had a little, there was a little evacuation in the cinema we saw it at. So we had to come back and watch.
What was so funny about that was there was an evacuation. We all got dragged out into the to the front of the cinema. Apparently, I found out what it was in the end. It was actually one of the cafes next door had problems. And then, like, within 15 minutes or so, they ushered us all back in. And there was the film rewound and paused.
Of course, yeah.
We sat down. But we'd lost 3/4 of the cinema.
Look, I don't think a lot of people like this film. It's been getting very low reviews. It's been getting probably from people who didn't see the end. It's been, you know, the thing is, it does what a McFarlane film does. It is a rude, surrealist sort of, not even surreal. It's a rude non sequitur based comedy.
Bunch of sketches.
Much like Family Guy. Much like Ted.
Yeah.
Okay. Or any of his other suite of animated comedies. I particularly like westerns. I particularly like this sense of humor, and there's a core message in here as well about the basic storyline is he gets dumped seemingly without reason all of a sudden.
I love the fact that the first scene in the film is him being dumped, and with everything that's going on, it was like we're in the wrong film.
But then you know it changes. I think the audience at home is starting to work out.
Hey, no, it's all right.
But where the film goes from there is really sweet, and it's really it's a good message for anybody who's had any knock about. And also about believing in yourself and also sort of...
I think that's the core message. It's about believing in yourself, which, funnily enough, is also the core message of...
Chef.
It's also the core message, in a way, of Maleficent.
And of Godzilla.
Oh, no, well, maybe.
It's actually the core message of the next film we'll talk about as well. But look, I thought there were... It's one of those, you know, films like this, jokes hit and miss.
Yeah.
I think there are more hits than there are misses. You said this to me at the time. He's got this amazing ability, McFarlane, to take everything one step too far, and then, or at least one step beyond where you'd expect it to go.
Well, it's almost like he's pushing boundaries.
There's a scene involving several hats, and I'm just going to say that.
And he pushes boundaries. He pushes it too. He goes, it's almost like it's that Bugs Bunny joke where he goes, you know, don't cross this line. The person crosses, he goes, well, don't cross this line. Well, don't cross this line.
Yeah.
And the person keeps crossing. McFarlane's like, he's almost doing that to the censorship department. He's like, I'm not allowed to cross that line. Look, I just crossed that line.
You've got everything in there from diarrhea jokes to anal sex. You know, it's... He. Nothing's sacred to him. They even make fun of Amanda Seyfried's eyes.
Yes,
the size of her eyes. You know, nothing. You know, people either play for type or against type. Like, you know, Liam Neeson plays a very Liam Neeson character with tongue firmly planted in cheek. Charlize Theron looks
and
like
something else planted in cheek.
Yeah. exactly right. well played, sir. you know, Charlize Theron is, apart from being gorgeous in that film as she always is. Looks like she's having a hell of a lot of fun doing this.
Just sidebar this for a second? Charlize Theron's career. Here is a woman who has managed to basically go from ice queen, always gorgeous, but complete ice queen, and has managed to basically go, okay, I've done all of that now, and now let's just have some fun. Because she's actually proved that she has a sense of humor in several things now, and she's charming, and she's lovely. And you sit there and you go, where's this been the whole time, you know? And apparently she's a really down-to-earth person in real life, and she's getting a chance to do that. She's not just another one of the Nicole Kidman-style ice queens out there.
There's more
to her, you know?
And it's like, I mean, she's got great comedy chops in this.
Oh, she's great.
Everyone does. Like, you know, you've got... I mean, Giovanna Ribisi plays sort of a variation on his character from Ted, which is great. Right down to the little
right
dance.
Right to the little dance.
You've got Sarah Silverman, who is playing Sarah Silverman.
She's quite literally the hooker with a heart of gold.
She plays that character. I mean, you know... their storyline gets, pardon me, their storyline almost, it's a one note joke that goes too, that, you know, gets played too far.
Once again, McFarlane just pushing it.
But you can't complain too much. No. I mean, it's a purely fun film, and I'm going to give this, let me see.
How many saloons are you?
I was gonna say, how many filled hats? How many saloons? I will give this 3.5 pints at a saloon.
3.5 pints at a saloon. That's interesting. I'm going to give it 3 pints at the saloon. Okay. I liked it. I thought it was fun. I don't think it is as solid as Ted.
You know, I had a personal feeling for this film.
No, absolutely. And I don't take that away from you at all. And I will watch this many times. Mm. But I think it's one of those sort of films where there are going to be passages where you go, I just want to see one sequence, or I just want to see one bit. As an entire film, I think it may just be a little too long.
And it is a little too long, I'll give it, which is why it stops me from giving it more. But also, watching it a second time, even though I knew some of the jokes were coming, they were still funny, and I still picked up stuff the second time that I missed the first time.
Yeah. I'd like to see it again. I would like to see it again.
There's a lot going on in
this. And that is a good sign.
Yes.
So anytime you want to see a film again, that's a good sign. Now, the next film you've seen, I haven't.
Okay, I saw this film literally this morning as part of the Sydney Film Festival.
And I will go on record saying I really want to see this
film.
And
it's a film about the making of a film that didn't get made.
This is a little bit like the
The Man from La Mancha.
From La Mancha, yeah.
So let's have a little listen to this.
His vision was so huge, so beyond what anybody else was doing at that time, things that George Lucas wasn't even going to try with Star Wars. It's enormous.
Part of Hollow's genius was finding the right people.
David Carradine, Mick Jagger, Dali as the Mad Emperor of the Galaxy.
Dali said, can I have a burning giraffe? All right, we'll have burning giraffe.
Orson Welles. Yeah, I say, I don't want to do it. I say, if you do the picture, I will hire the chef of the restaurant and you will eat us here every day. And I say, I do it. Giger nunca había hecho.
So, I mean, this Alejandro Jodorowsky, if you know his films, El Topo, The Holy Mountain, this guy's batshit, right? But amazing. Like, these are phenomenal films. These are films that nobody else could possibly make. Now, back in the 70s, he got this idea of making Dune. Which he hadn't read. The Frank Herbert, and he says as much in the film.
I love that.
But he had to make it. Hmm. And he had this beautiful vision of it. And there are, look, the one of the people interviewed at the start of the film is Nicholas Winding Refn, right? Who did Drive and Only God Forgives and films like that. He talks about being at Jodorowsky's or Jodorowsky. No one pronounces it the same way twice.
I thought it was Jodorowsky, but
Jodorowsky, Jodorowsky. Mm. He's from Chile, so
who knows? Yeah. We should ask Jorge about this.
No, but there's the Spanish pronunciation of it. Then there's the actual origin of his name is European. So there's that way of pronouncing it. Everyone called him Jodo or Hodder, so let's just go with that. Hodo's film. Let's call him Alejandro instead. his vision of the film.
Let's just call him for lunch, and we'll call it even.
Exactly right. Yeah. His vision of the film was this spiritual journey that was, and he was basically this documentary talked about him assembling his spiritual warriors, everybody he wanted on board. You had to be sort of ready to do this vision. Now, for example, one of the people he wanted to hire was the person who did the visual effects on 2001, whose name
Douglas Trumbull.
Douglas Trumbull, right, yeah, exactly. And he went to talk to him, and he said he arrived at his office, he takes like 40 calls while he's talking to him, and he's great. And he walks out and goes, like, I don't want to do business with you.
Douglas Trumbull did?
No.
Oh, right.
Alejandro Jodorowsky says, I don't want to do business with you. And his partner at the time, the French producer, said, are you mad? You're turning this guy down? He goes, no, he's not on the same spirit that I'm in. And they went to the visual effects guy from A Dark Star, who was Dan O'Bannon.
Dan O'Bannon, yeah.
And
who was actually a writer.
But they went to Dan O'Bannon and said, we want you to be involved in this. And he... we talked to him for a while. Apparently they shared a joint, you know, and then he said he saw like light splitting off from Jodorowsky's head. And by the end of it, he was like, I'll do it. And then he just approached people like this. He just sort of got this in there. Like, he's like, the emperor, I want Dali to play the emperor. And, you know, he went there and made all these unreasonable demands. And he's like, things like, I want a flaming giraffe to be in the scene with me. And he's like, yes, I'll do that. And he paints his pitch, but you see throughout the film, there's this giant book he ended up making. And I'm talking like 2 phone books thick. Book that he would take, and there's only a handful of these. There's only like 2 copies of these.
I don't know why they haven't made copies of this and sell the book.
I would buy this book in a heartbeat, because that you see glimpses of it. It's got you know, Chris Foss's magnificent art you see on a big screen, and they made it look, and they haven't just shown the art, they've enhanced it so you can see it, you know, you can turn it around in various dimensions, and they've highlighted bits so it actually looks almost 3-dimensional when you're looking at it. They've done this amazing. They've recreated this amazing opening tracking shot where he just goes through the entire universe, you know, in the film. But they've done it by just using the storyboards, which were done by Jean Girard, who we know better as Mobius.
Yeah.
And you see all this stuff coming through. It would have been magnificent. It also would have been impossible to film in the 70s. Like, it wouldn't have happened. Like, the thing is, if he tried to make that film, and then thinking, this is where they talked about it. It said, imagine that had been the first giant science fiction film and not Star Wars.
Mm.
Imagine what the direction
everything would have
sci-fi
gone.
Sci-fi would have gone as a result of that. But then the fact that this film failed, the pulling together of those people, Mobius, Dan O'Bannon,
Geiger.
Now, those 3 people sound familiar. It's because they were all pulled together in another film that came out about 4 years later by a little man named Ridley Scott. The film was Alien. And they said, because that failed and all those people got pulled together, you get Alien. And because you get Alien, you get Blade Runner. And because you get Blade Runner, you get, you know, and you go through and you get things like, you know, an organic path that leads you down to The Matrix and all these sort of films, right? And it's kind of like you see the fingerprints of this film in everything from Raiders of the Lost Ark. They make a great case to how that movie influenced Raiders of the Lost Ark, to how it influenced very much Prometheus. In fact, there were designs from Dune that are literally in...
Well, the head, you said. Yeah?
There's a big building, a giant building, a curved building with kind of like a fat man's head at the top of it with the back of an alien coming out of it. And that is literally a design straight from... That was going to be the Harkonnen's palace in Dune.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they would have had like Pink Floyd doing the soundtrack just for the House Atreides, you know, and all that sort of stuff.
God, I hope this film
He wanted to cast people like... Mick Jagger and Orson Welles, who you heard in that, and Dali as the Emperor. You know, he had this very distinct... And the thing was, he got all these people to agree to be in the film. He got all that cast of people, but no studio wanted to touch it.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to fund this film. And probably rightly so, because it would have probably been a disaster had it been made.
It would have been a financial disaster. I don't know if the world was ready for it,
no,
quite frankly.
The film was... And then he was like... He eventually says, you know, when Dune came out, David Lynch, he was disappointed because he said, oh, David Lynch was a director I admired so much, so I was so upset because somebody else got to make this film that I had a vision for and I didn't want to go and see it, but I got dragged along like a prisoner... by friends to see this. No, it'll make you feel better. And he goes, and I was so overjoyed to see that the film was awful. because it meant that, you know, I didn't fail.
Yeah.
I think it was just, but the end, he gives this very, very impassioned speech about no what you do. He said, why can't film be art? Why can't... He goes, if I had made this film, it would have been, you know, they said, you have to make it at an hour and a half. He goes, why can't it be 12 hours? Why can't it be 20 hours? You know, why can't film just be, you know, however long it takes to tell the story?
Because distributors need their
bottom line. I mean, if he'd been making this today, if he'd been around today, he probably would have gone to like, HBO or something and had a series made out of this with his vision of it. You know, if he... he gives this really impassioned speech about following your passions, whatever they are. If you're excited about it, it doesn't matter if it fails. You put everything you had into it, and it's not a failure because you put something out into the world, and that's even if it doesn't become a physical thing. He said that dream of Dune is now in the world, and we've gone well over an hour, haven't we?
That's all right.
He said that dream of Dune is now part of the world, you know, and they talk about that in terms of affecting everything. You know, and how everything has been touched by all this science fiction has been touched by the fact that these people got drawn together in the first place. And it really is inspirational in the sense that you think, well, I could put something out there and it could be the crappiest novel I've ever written, but it's mine and it's out there now and it's been released and maybe that'll affect something, you know. And
so if nothing really else, nice. Hopefully this film will just be the message to future artists.
Yeah, don't give up.
Don't give up, yeah. Look, I really want to see this. I saw the trailer for this actually a couple of months ago and I'm dying to see it and I just don't know if it's going to get an Australian release. I just really don't think it's
going to. Look, I think it will. I think it's actually got a distributor. At the very least, it will be released on DVD and Blu-ray somewhere.
And I'll have to buy it internationally.
And even though some of these designs, like the Chris Foss designs, look amazing on a big screen.
I've got a pretty big screen.
You've got a big screen, but I'm talking about cinema screen, right?
Yeah.
It is a film that is a lot of talking heads, but it's a film that they're visually, it's a visually interesting documentary. And it's not just talking heads. Mm. And they've got pretty much everybody who's alive involved in talking to this. Even Geiger before he died, they've got...
Did they get Dan O'Bannon? Because
he's
dead too.
They've got audio recordings of Dan O'Bannon talking about it, and they've also got Dan O'Bannon's widow talking about it. And she's got a lot of correspondence he wrote to her because he was living in France at the time. So he's got like all the letters she wrote back to him and the sketches attached and stuff like
that. For those who want to see Dan O'Bannon in one of his very few acting gigs, actually, go watch Dark Star. Because Dark Star, not only did he do the special effects for, but he also co-wrote it.
Yes.
And he also stars as Sergeant Pinback. And with the, I don't want to do that. He is fantastic. He's just fantastic. And he was the co-writer with Ronald Chusett of Alien.
Yes.
He was a fantastic writer. He didn't score so well, didn't he? He also write The Never Dead or something like that. He went on to do that. A couple of other horror films after
O'Bannon
with Chusett by himself actually after Alien, and I don't think they quite did.
No,
as well,
he never quite had the same success after that. But yeah, how do you write anything better than Alien?
Well, exactly. Yeah. Or Dark Star for that matter. I love Dark Star. Dark Star is a personal favorite of mine. Whenever I feel sad, I put Dark Star on it. It'll always bring a smile to my face. It's fantastic.
Well, Dave, that looks like a show.
I think we do have to go. Just a reminder that this has been basically a special presentation. It is numerically in sequence, but it is for everybody, and it is for the behind the panels people too. I'm sorry we don't talk much about comic books. We are taking a few more weeks off from behind the panels, or a couple more weeks at least. Mm-hmm. To be a little bit irregular even when we come back, because we have a weekend where we're in Melbourne and
because we probably won't come back until later in June, and then we're taking the following week off in July,
so it's a bit rough. Just bear with us. By mid-July everything will be back on track. We'll be back to normal. However,
think of it as our mid-season break,
or our midlife crisis, one of the two. But in the meantime, we will be putting out GMCs irregularly, as we always do, every couple of weeks or what have you. And we are going to be looking at doing the Buffy marathon.
Yes, so that'll be a separate thing.
Yeah, so there will be stuff coming out. Just bear with us. If you are only a panels listener, make sure you subscribe to the Superfeed, because you'll get more stuff on that.
Yeah, if you just like hearing our voices.
Yeah, if you just like hearing our
voices. We know a lot of you do both, but...
Yeah, if you do just want to hear panels... Apologies again, but it will be back. It's just taking a couple weeks off. Look, we have far too much invested in this financially and time. I've been doing this now for, I think we're approaching our fifth anniversary.
And we should say one of the other things that's going to be coming out, there will be a couple of interview specials that will come out in there as well. I'm doing, with any luck, I've been doing an interview around Oz Comic Con about 2 days after we record this. So we'll have those kind of things as intermediate stopgaps going out on the Behind the Panels feed. But as you said, Dave, everything goes out on the Geek Actually Superfeed. Go and check out behindthepanels.net. I've just updated the banner art.
And you still
that.
Put content out on behindthepanels.net. So
all the latest comics news and stuff that's fit to print goes out on that. The big news we didn't mention today was that Peyton Reed and Adam McKay are the writer director writer team of
rewriter and director
of Ant-Man. Mm. And Scott Henriksen, is it Henriksen? No, Derrickson. Is the director, is a horror guy, Exorcism of Emily Rose and Sinister, is doing Doctor Strange.
Now, I think the bigger news there is that Marvel has now said they're doing Doctor Strange.
And the front runners are apparently, at the moment...
Jared Leto is one.
Well, no, I heard this morning that the two that they narrowed it down to are Benedict Cumberbatch and Tom Hardy. Now, can you imagine if they cast Benedict Cumberbatch and have him in a scene with Robert Downey Jr.? It's like Sherlock meets Sherlock.
Oh, I want to see Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange now. Yeah. I can see him with the big porn stash.
Yes.
Oh, dude, I want this to happen. With his voice? You know? Oh, dude. I just got shivers.
I got a fangasm.
Benedict Cumberbatch had not even crossed my radar.
No.
We've been talking so many things about who could play him.
Johnny Depp and John Hamm. And
didn't
all
even cross my radar that that could be a possibility.
And he'd be a good person to structure the second act around.
Yeah. You know? And he's got that... Because he's also got that slight oddness to him.
Mm.
He could pull... Oh, man, I'm so excited all of a sudden. And on that note, I think we should finish the show.
Why are you going to finish yourself off?
Now, we mentioned all the addresses before. We'll do it very quickly. You can find me at on Twitter at Dave McVeigh or Geek Actually. What is it? Where do you find me? GeekActually.com. or you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/GeekActually.
You can find me on Twitter at DVDBits. You can find me at TheRealBits.com. That's the RELBits.com. And of course, BehindThePanels.net.
And of course, you can find David Longo
at David Longo on Twitter or DamnGoodCup.com.
Absolutely. We should always plug him. He will be back soon. We should always plug him. That sounds terrible. Dave.
In fact, that's why he's had to take a week off.
Dave, I'm so sorry I just said
that.
We are
plugging him too hard.
All right, so we are going out with... This is a remix that was brought to my attention. this is... his name is Metronome, and he's remixed a bunch of stuff. Go check his stuff out on YouTube. This is a... Considering we just had the WWDC keynote, this was appropriate. This is his remix of the iPhone 5, and it just blew my mind. If you go watch the YouTube video, he's doing all of this live. He's got it all pre-programmed onto his mixing board and he's playing it out live. It's 3 minutes long. We're not going to play the whole thing here. I do encourage you to go watch this YouTube video, and he does have a SoundCloud account that you can go download his music if you like his remixes. For those who are fans, he does an amazing remix of Breaking Bad as well, of the main title theme of Breaking Bad. Until we see you again, I'm David McVeigh.
I'm Richard Gray.
And this has been the Geek Movie Club.
Hi, phone, Metro, no.